Welcome to episode 80 of the podcast. Today we are paying tribute to a legend, a global music legend, and he passed away in the year 2023.
It's an exciting time, really. Always, you know, coming around and getting ready to do the pod. We would be paying tribute to a legend, one of a kind legend, one in a billion, literally, because he's probably just one of one. And you know, when you love the fact that somebody has lived a very, very fruitful life, a long life, and with that, a whole lot of great things happened. So that's why we're here, you know, to pay tribute to the greats.
So how do we begin? We are bloody Nigerians, quote unquote. We're just Nigerians who enjoy music. In fact, we are of the younger generation. So the question would then be, why Harry Belafonte? What's here to talk about? What's our business? How do we connect to that generation? We're talking
1940s down.
Yes. But it was born around what time? It was born early, yeah. Very, very early.
Yeah, so, it was born 1927.
So the question we should first try to address is, what is our remotest or our smartest connection to that generation, especially Harry Belafonte?
I think from the early times, if I may say, from the early times, even for those of us that are of the younger generation, talking about Generation Z and, you know, the millennials, there's always like, there are always songs that live through time. And that's one of the exciting things about music. A song can be done all the way back in the 1950s, 1940s, and find their way into the early 2000s. When you're thinking about 1960s, you're thinking about songs like Miriam Makeba's Tongue Song. And then you think about songs like Kwata Kwata and all of those songs that have gone through the decades, and they still remain relevant in some homes, in many places, many spaces. You know, some of these guys are still, we still go to parties, go to concerts, and we start off with their kind of music. So one way or the other, if you have dropped a classic at some point in time, it would find its way down. And I understand that, yes, the disparity might be a whole lot, because, I mean, you're talking about the early 2000s, the late 2000s, the early 2020s, not even 2010s. And you still can relate to a couple of songs. That just tells you how much or how good sometimes some music just transcends time, transcends the limitation of time. Because sometimes time can be crazy and, you know, we push a lot of things aside. We also have one very, very important effect, or one very, very important medium that reminds us of all of this. All of this actually, you know, there's a special medium that always reminds us about all these kind of songs. Apart from the fact that these songs might live a long time in our memories or the memories of our parents, and then we get to like listen to them over time. But there's one thing, the medium I'm talking about is film. Film for so many years has been like a strong way to remind us of old things, old music, and then we continue to sing them because of how good they are. For example, Frank Sinatra's That's Life. It became like the song that we would hear in almost every song that was depicting the early 60s. And even though, you know, it was a song that was done in the late 60s, you always think about That's Life and you know, you think about all of these songs. I say, oh yeah, that's a great one, that's a great song. And even somebody that is 12, 20, 19, and you have a thing for watching movies that, even movies of this present time that depicts the old time, you'd hear a song like That's Life. Another song that comes to mind is Emma Thurman's Anyone. Anyone, you know, who knows what love is. Amazing song, beautiful stuff that was done in the late 50s. And we can still hear it in now because of late 50s, early 60s. I can't remember the exact time, but it was around that time. Another song, again, if you're a big fan of old movies like Back to the Future, you think about a song like Earth Angels that was done by the Penguins in 1956 or 1958 thereabouts. These songs were done in the late 1950s. And also songs from the Contours like Do You Love Me? You know, so there's always that thing that reminds us of the time. So one way or the other, we would have picked up one thing and one music or the other. And then I'm sure Boyega ever ask you to, there's some certain songs, maybe in the African sphere that you didn't know before, but because you're a big fan of old movies or because they're doing a normal film, they would depict an older song, you know, and they would depict, you know, an older time and then bring in old music. So if we are like very observant and we're very careful to listen, sometimes this thing cannot surpass us. We would always get in tune with it. We would always listen to stuff like that. And that's why I think Harry Belafonte comes into play, because for every single Calypso themed movie, there's probably one or two Harry Belafonte songs. There are already songs we know that was redone in the later, like later in the future, that we would get into as we continue to talk, because this is just like introductory, you know, the introductory part of the pod so far. But you know, if you watch a movie that was done that was depicting the early 60s, for example, if you see any movie from like the old James Bond series, you probably hear something from Harry Belafonte. And then, you know, the banana song.
Why old songs come in soft forms, in very simple formats. You know, you were telling me about those big names, you know, the Bobby Vintons, even the OGs that made music at the time come down to Nigeria. You'd hear Awon Baba Kokoro. Olanduwo was so sophisticated at around that time, but he also did tiny beats, songs that were simple. You had Bongo Zikwe, who did Still Searching. You had Louis Armstrong, that popular song, jazz music, simple, soft. So why is it that we had to do Afro 65 at some point? Why is it that we had to introduce techno? We had to pace it and make it jivey and loud and fast and hip-hoppy and all of that.
Well, I want to believe that, you know, from the time music changed over the years. And I think that's one of the beauty of music. The music that we had in the 1940s and the 1950s, it sounded a whole lot different from what we had in the 60s and the 70s. But I think in terms of tempo, you can actually tell it's like a progression. If you listen to stuff from the 19th century, that's the 1800s, as we know them, the Amadeus, the classical music, there was a certain tempo. It was like, of course, we had, you know, the high tempo, the crazy sounds at the time as well, but most of the commercial music had this sophisticated kind of sound. I think it was like classism. Do you get what I'm saying?
I feel you
It was
a
like,
little
oh
bit.
yeah, for you to be sophisticated in your sound, you have to be very slow, calm. That's why jazz still had that element of, no matter how it is, doom, 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 there's always this mellow thing to it. If you listen to even reggae of the early 60s, the Desmond Deckers, even though it was a big, you know, reggae, ska, rock steady, all those ones, even though they had that, you know, uppity or up tempo sound, it was still sophisticated. Like, you think about songs like Wake Up in the Morning, Slaving for Bread, like the Israelites, that he would pronounce as the Israelites, like the way the Jamaicans would. I still had that, you know, cool, like Shantytown, and I lose the Maroos, the Maware, and you know, something like that. He has always that slow mood. And then when he got into early 70s, we kicked up with disco, and then it became very, you know, pa 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 pa, very fast. You know, songs like I Want Your Love, I Want Your Love, or Bee Gees' Saturday Night Live, and all of that. So it was like a recognition of the decade. Do you understand? Like, when you think about 1950s, when you think about all the songs from 1950s, even though there were a lot of music, one song comes to mind, The Penguins. I think I already said that earlier. Earth Angels. Earth Angels, perfect song for the 1950s, because it reminds you of the time. It reminds you of what that music was like. If you were doing something that was up and about and crazy like that at the time, you might not pop. Do you understand? Or you might pop in maybe a small circle. So it will not be like you're like that guy. The guys of the time were doing slow music. And that's why it kind of like, you know, transitioned over the years, and it went into, you know, transcended the years, and then got into different genres. So all the genres of the time, you need to have that slow vibe, slow energy, sophisticated sound, and that works for a while, you know. I still think I'm a big fan of it. I like to listen to songs like that because it kind of takes you to a certain level. A song comes to mind right now that was released in 1968 or 66 thereabout. I'm sure you know the song. A Change Is Gonna Come, Sam Cooke.
I love Sam Cooke. I'm with you.
Yeah, Sam Cooke, A Change Is Gonna Come. You also think about Otis Redding, Sitting on the Dock of the Bay. Even the other guys that were popping at the time, Marvin Gaye as well, with Tammy Terrell. So everybody had that slow vibe. It was like, now let me use the Nigerian parlance. Now, waiting the horse at the time, sure you get. So when you go into the studio, it was not like you couldn't do what the other guys were doing in rock and psychedelic rock and you know, what those guys were trying to do. For example, Elvis Presley was doing something entirely different. Whilst everybody was singing a certain way, he was singing a certain way. Frankie Lymon was singing a certain way. Why Do Fools Fall in Love? It's very fast. Why do fools fall in love? Ooh, 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 ooh. So like, it was very, very fast, but it was a different tune. It's like Michael Jackson and Jackson 5. They were there in the 50s, there in the early 60s. They would do songs like, you know, that we would know that were very nice, and then they would still do the ABCs. And then they say, stop together, and I can't remember the name of that song right now, but it was one of those big songs they had in the 60s. Well, we want to love you.
ABC.
Yeah, Jackson 5 ABC was a different tune, but they had their slow classics, and those slow classics at the time did well. The songs that I'm talking about that they had, like up tempo, those songs did not do well until the 70s came around. Do you get? So even though those songs were really good at the time, they were good enough to perform at stations and perform at shows, they were not the biggest songs. Do you get? They were the side B songs. But those side B songs went on to do great numbers in the 1970s. So I think it was just about the time. And being that Calypso King, Harry Belafonte, that we have, of course, as the guy we are talking about, the person we are putting in the spotlight, the reason why he was on that level as well was because in his best years, that was the kind of sound that was reigning. But he still did it his own way with the Calypso, you know, genre and everything he did at the time.
You know, something that I find fascinating about him is he was very multifaceted. He was an actor. He did TV. He did music for TV. He also did activism. And, you know, he seemed like an all-round guy in entertainment and also activism. Now, I want to link up Calypso music, Caribbean music, Jamaica, and Black consciousness music. Is there a way to bring together his different endeavors in music and activism where something brings everything together, especially with the fact that he was in TV production? There's a popular special that he, you know, Tonight with Belafonte, I think. There's a particular TV, he had a good time with TV and then movies. So is there a way that all comes together in your own perspective? All of his different parts, TV, music, and then Black consciousness.
I know you're not a fan of this, but I'd just like to state first and foremost that Harry Belafonte is one of the few performers in the world to win an EGOT. EGOT meaning Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, and Tony. You understand? Even though he won the Oscar in a non-competitive, you know, category, it still counts. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It still counts. But then, what I'm trying to bring out of all of this is that I feel like that's one of the reasons why Harry Belafonte is different from every other person. He was a complete artist. Do you get? When I think about Harry Belafonte, somebody else that might come to mind, I'm not putting them on the same level because I know a couple of people might listen to this and they might feel offended by the person I'm about to call. But I still kind of feel like same way we accord respect to Harry Belafonte for being that amazing guy all through, I think Doris Day should have that as well. Doris Day for Que Sera Sera, perhaps. Because Doris Day was active very strongly in the golden age of cinema. And she was also a great singer as well. And she did other things too in terms of, you know, politics,
TV. She was that lady. In fact, if not for the fact that there was the Marilyn Monroe's and there was the Sharon, you know, I forgot the name of that lady now, Sharon at the time, she could have been the it girl. But I know, like, you know, a couple of things, a couple of boxes could have not been ticked for her that I'd rather not talk about right now, Jiget, but most of them were very superficial. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But apart from that, in terms of workload, work ethics, work rate, in terms of talent as a person, you have to think about it. She didn't have any civil rights to be able to fight for because she was born white. Do you get what I'm saying? But she was still very outspoken as well. And I think that's one of the plus for Belafonte. Belafonte, being that guy, he was everywhere. I can't remember. I don't know whether I ever got to. Of course, I'm not sure I came out. I came around that the Tonight Show or whatever, the Ari Belafonte Show or anything like that. But I know that he was very, very, you know, heavy on being on TV, you know, come around to Tonight Shows, always talking. And there was a time that he was working on the Tonight Show for Johnny Carson, which was in 1968. So around February. So he had his time on TV as well. I think it was about 4 days or 5 days. And they do that more often right now. So even though now it might not look like a special thing, at the time, it was a very big deal. Do you get what I'm saying? He was doing every single thing his hand could touch. I mean, I feel like if he had that painting energy as well, I'm sure he would have painted, and maybe we would have been calling him, you know, maybe Basquiat right now or something. Or maybe we'll have a lot of paintings that we'll call it, you know, a Belafonte or something like that. But he was an all-round guy. And I think we have few of them in music, because music already on its own is a lot of work. Now, having to like split that up and do film, do TV, be a political activist and be able to get yourself all around in terms of the entertainment sphere is a big deal. I think one of the names right in this our modern era that I love so much that is on that line, on that pedestal, I think is Jamie Foxx. Encompasses everything, has an album, has been, you know, done. He has done something with the Tonys. He has done something. He has an Oscar. Amazing guy, amazing musician, amazing comedian, stagecraft up, you know, up that level, biggest level. So Harry Belafonte was all of that guy. In fact, Harry Belafonte was so amazing during his lifetime that people know him for different things, right? So there's some people that love Harry Belafonte because of music. There's some people that love him because of his political activism. There's some people that love him because of the few films that he actually was in, you understand, because he had quite an amazing time, because he was not just a regular film actor. He was there in the early days, he was there in the golden age days, you understand, and he did a lot of theater as well. So all-round great guy. Filmography, I'm sure, I don't know, maybe 15 movies or thereabouts, spread over like 4 decades, with the last one being Black Klansman that was released in 2018 by Spike Lee. So all-round guy, great guy. He did it all, basically. He did it all. I think the Nat King Cole show that was done in 1957 is one of those ones that you want to call and say that was a big one for him. Ed Sullivan show in 1953 to 1964 was also something that was huge. So, all in all, great guy.
We will get to his discography much later, but this one just caught my eye. Calypso Songs, special Harry Belafonte story in picture and song. And I think this goes all the way back to 1957. Now, I'm going to mention some of the songs. I'm fascinated by the titles. And, you know, they're, like I said, simple titles. Kind of reminds me of Eric Donaldson, Mommy's Gonna Love You, Penny Farthing, Sweet Jamaica. Titles are just fascinating with old music. So I'm going to mention some of the songs on this particular Calypso Songs collection. You have Rum and Coca-Cola. That's Giving Gin and Juice. There is Marianne. There is Stone Cold Dead in the Market, the Banana Boat song. Ron Joe, Hold Em Joe, Matilda, Matilda, Cindy, Oh Cindy, The Naughty Little Flea. Yes, that must be Flea. So, these things look, I'm looking for that word, they look simplistic and, you know, forgettable. It's not like Public Enemy that would come with superficial titles where they are talking about, you know, Milky Way or Big Bang Theory or anything like that. Even if they did, I'm talking about simplistic or simple artists like Belafonte, even if they were going to speak on global or hard or tough topics, they would simplify it at the end of the day. That's just by the side. I know we already talked about the simplistic part, but I want to track back to his story as a young person and where he grew up. Belafonte, I'm going to read through a particular article here from the National Museum of African American History and Culture. King of Calypso, Belafonte was born in Harlem, New York, to Caribbean parents. His mother was set on him getting an education, but Belafonte found school to be difficult due to dyslexia. At 17 years old, he decided to drop out of high school and join the Navy. When he returned home, he became a janitor's assistant. While on the job, he was given theater tickets as a tip. And I think this would be the Nat King Cole event that you were referring to. This was his first introduction to theater, and that night he found his true calling. I mean, life, how life comes at you. But I'm fascinated by the fact that he had problems with dyslexia, and also there was poverty in the mix, because his mom and dad, I believe, migrated from Jamaica or a Caribbean country. And there's part of the story that talks about poverty in the early years, and then he had challenges in school, but still he came around to find his destiny.
Exactly. You know, I was going to talk about it too. I was having a conversation lately with somebody, and I said a couple of things you see in creative people, this is like some sort of balance. You know how we always talk about the fact that, you know, life, I mean, in the science world, I know normally in our own parlance we say life, no balance, right? But in the science world, we have to, like, we always think about the fact that one way or the other, things are always balanced, and that comes to even our nature as human beings, right? Somebody that carries so much creative energy, you realize that they are sort of like, you know, short-handed in one place. Do you understand? Or they are not extremely gifted in another part of their, maybe the normal way, the same way we say the right brain, the left brain, and all that. So, like, you think about it, I mean, like, in some spaces, the moment they find out he has dyslexia and he couldn't handle school, she would have probably been forced to do some other things, or have to be forced to be able to try and get something out of whatever it is that he can't do. But then you also see that because of, you know, chance, time, opportunity, he came across something that would change his life forever. And I think it would have been really bad, or it would have been off for us to not get or enjoy the talent that is Harry Belafonte. But that might have not been the case. So that's what I'm saying. Most of the time, I always feel like, because you're short-handed here, because you do not have a lot to give here, doesn't mean you can't give a lot in this part. You know, it reminds me of one of those quotes from Mother Teresa that says, few of us will do great things, but all of us can do small things with great love. So, like, that can be, you know, twisted, rewritten in different ways. You know, there's always a part of you that you can put a lot of energy into and to, you know, be able to bring out something great. And that's why Harry Belafonte, he's just that guy. I think, I'm sure in the nearest future there would be a couple of documentaries to put about him because of all the things he did. I didn't hear you go there.
That's the 80% rule you're talking about. There's a rule that says let your, you know, whatever is working for you, direct your 80% energy into that space. And if you're able to do that, it will multiply into other spaces that you give 20%. It's going to help the other skill or other areas of your life.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I think his life is kind of like a very good example of all of that, because you see how he walked around it and he made something great out of it. You know, that part of him that people might have not seen early, but because of, you know, time and chance, he got to know about it, and then he put his mind into it and it became something great. And I'm sure in the future there would be probably a documentary to explain to people like how all of those things happened. But let me just stick around with his music, because of course, like you said earlier, there are a couple of songs that we know now that we never knew for a while, or we didn't know for a while that they were songs that were taken off Harry Belafonte. Being that Sample Access is the name of the show, a couple of songs, you know, you'll be reminded. For example, Jamaica Farewell. Jamaica Farewell reminds you of a song that starts off the album for Yinka Ifele Peter Experience. Do you know that song? I'm sure you do. We heard this song for one time together.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, iconic song.
Yeah, so like you see it, and then if you check across board, you see that so many songs over the years, I mean, we have spoken about the fact that we feel that there's nothing new under the sun anymore. Every song you hear now, it's as a result of, you know, songs that have not been heard before. Even the trap songs that sometimes we don't understand, they are taken from songs that, you know, probably been heard before, or probably they take one song, loop it, and then they try to work something off it. So there's always a basis that we have heard before. And Harry Belafonte has a couple of songs that would stand the test of time, some that we would hear even 100 years from now. Songs like Dale, the Banana Boat song, Jump in the Line, Shake, Sonora. We have Mary's Boy Child. Now, this Mary's Boy Child, I wouldn't want to talk about it right now, but Boyega, let me ask you quickly, because, you know, I like the fact that you have done your research about it. What exactly do you find about what? Well, yeah, I'm sure you try. The trajectory of Harry Belafonte's, you know, success. He wasn't the top guy for so many decades, but he was always around in all of the decades that he lived. What do you find most fascinating about his trajectory?
I think so first of all, disclaimer, I haven't done as much research as Nelson may have implied in the phrasing of that question. But I am going to attempt, because I read some articles about the man, listened to a few, I think one or two albums. But I think what's obvious, according to your question, from the question you're asking, is that he may not be the every year album on the charts type of person. He obviously wasn't like a superstar Michael Jackson or Elvis Presley-esque type of artist. But he was humble. When I say humble, I don't mean that literally. His life and person and music career, so to speak, was humble. I'm looking at a picture here of him receiving an honorary award from President Bill Clinton sometime in 1994. And this is just, you know, you honor people who are excellent in different areas. So it's not necessarily about being a superstar or being like a song like Farewell Jamaica. That's what you invite when you have a freedom movement, or you have an event in the lines of black consciousness. That's an artist you want to have. And then you look at the collaboration with Miriam Makeba, and then the We Are the World song in 1985 that had, you know, Diana Ross, Michael Jackson, the dream team at the time. He was involved in writing that song. So causes like that would keep him in the minds of people, whether or not he's on the charts, so to speak. So his music was soulful, family, black consciousness, community, things like that. So even if it's 5 years or 10 years without an album, even now that he has passed away, there will always be need to go back to his classics, because these songs are what define us at our lowest, at our brightest, as a community, as people, as, you know, humble and proud and all of that. So yeah, we don't have as many of his like. The names that come to mind, I hope I wouldn't be, you know, I would put Eric Donaldson right there, Bob Marley. So look at Bob Marley's discography. We're jamming, Three Little Birds, War, Natural Mystic. Those songs are different. They are not your regular songs. And that's why when you look at Harry Belafonte, you can tell that his music direction wasn't necessarily for, you know, quote-unquote hits, but for the long term, for posterity, for the kids yet unborn, all of those things. I guess it's time for me to toss back a question to you. Are you there?
Yeah, I wanted to pick up, before you ask a question, I wanted to pick up something you said. You know, you said something about doing songs that will stand the test of time, like, you know, carefully writing songs, not just for now, but for later. You think about it,
Look at it this way. Maybe not even carefully. It might just be natural. It might just be, oh, this is what I have in mind. So I doubt that Harry Belafonte would sit for days or for months trying to craft a song. They all seem to me like they came from a place. You know, when you are gifted, look at a child that had dyslexia in school, but would the night he found his passion, that's soft. When you have found your passion, you are not struggling. So I'm just saying that he may not even be struggling or be trying too hard to make a soulful, make a song that would inspire. It's just natural. It's like, what a wonderful world. Simple and QED, quite easily done. So I think that's the phrase I'm looking for. QED, this is what I'm guessing, because he comes off as, this is natural to me. And then, in fact, look at his live performances. Look at the soul he puts into the songs. They don't seem like we're rehearsing so hard to try to get this. He's just freestyling and having fun. That's what I perceive.
Yeah. I like that angle that you took. But what I was trying to actually take off that, which I appreciate everything you said. I feel like I agree with you 100. I think it was natural for him. When you find your groove, you stick with it and you just be able to do things naturally. But what I wanted to, you know, steal out of that was, I saw a video recently of Timbaland explaining the reason why hits are not the way they used to be anymore. And he was talking about the fact that people would, you know, do songs for now without actually putting as much energy as they would put for their older songs. Do you get? You know how, like, maybe a new artist would come up and then they would have a sound and they would have, you know, people that love that sound. But because of, they would have to morph with the time and the sound of the now, they would slowly lose themselves because they have to, like, oh yeah, let me make what this is all about, let me make this thing about this, make this stuff about that. You get what I'm saying? So, like, they would get lost in all of that. But I think people like Harry Belafonte or those guys of that time, including Harry Belafonte, they made sure that they did songs that spoke, that had gone through them. It wasn't a song that was supposed to be put out for just commercial purposes or for people to just digest, but songs that they themselves would feel from the deepest parts of themselves. And so every single body of work put out, there's always immense work done that represents them as a person. So it's easy for them to actually be able to make songs that would last forever. Because, like you said, that album you're talking about, I think that was the album that was released in late 1960s. And let's just first put this out there that Harry Belafonte started making music from 1948, and he did not stop making music till he passed away. So you understand that this person that stood exactly everything that had to do with music, and it's beautiful that actually worked through the years. And I appreciate the fact that, like I said to you before you answered the question, that he wasn't that guy that was popping up like, if you do a list of songs in the 80s, you probably see maybe one or two songs from Harry Belafonte, but it was not that guy that was everywhere every time. But every single decade, you would see one or two things that you hold on to and say, yes, this is a piece, whether it is film, whether it is political activism, whether it is TV, whether it is music, that you can hold on to and say, Harry Belafonte, he's that guy.
Now, before we, as we try to close this down, let's talk about that famous first million LP, the long play that sold 1 million first. And help me vet and confirm this. Are we saying in the whole wide world on record, or we should say in America, the first LP that sold 1 million copies was by Harry Belafonte? Is that what this is? And how did that come about?
Whilst I would love to argue this, I don't have any information to walk around. So I think we'd have to agree with them that yes, if it was recorded, and it makes perfect sense, he was probably the biggest artist at the time. So yes, if it was recorded that after the music was sold, he made the first million LPs. Yeah, I think we have to agree with them.
Okay, here we go. I'm in a hurry to wrap up, so let me know if we're missing anything. Let's talk about his impact on the generations that followed. Ayefele, Yinka Ayefele in Nigeria, Peter Experience. There is...
Excuse My Charisma, Effing With The Preacher, Swagger Down Path, Comedy Commissioner. That's Lil Wayne.
Okay, that's Lil Wayne. My father. Oh yeah, that song was originally by Harry Belafonte. Brown Skin Girl by Beyonce featuring Wizkid and St. John. There is a tiny connection to Harry Belafonte. And then one more in Africa. What's the name of this man? My love is here to stay, won't go away, I promise to love you every day. In fact,
oh my baby,
So that's Two Baba featuring VIP. Yeah, VIP featuring Two Baba. Once upon a time, I met this gentle lady. She's amazing. Oh, she touched my soul. This was 2007. God, man, I was outside. Not really outside, but I was listening to Two Face heavy. So tell me about how Harry Belafonte's impact would bounce across generations, and you know, particularly that fine tune called Farewell Jamaica. That is a stupidly beautiful tune.
Well, let me start with Jamaica Farewell. I think Jamaica Farewell has to be up there as probably one of the best sounds ever made. The song was written by Lord Burgress, also known as Ivan Burgee. And he was the writer himself, American-born, half-Barbadian. And she used to write wonderful music at the time. And it's all about the beauties of the West Indian Islands, yeah? So that song was released in 1956. The genre actually was called Mento at the time, from the album Calypso. Now, he recorded it at the time, and a couple of things went down. I'm just going to like to, you know, read that out quickly. Being that Harry Belafonte himself, you know, he was quite popular in the West Indies, it just made perfect sense for Borges to connect to him and tell him to help him to, you know, record this song. And Borges acknowledged that his tune of Another Mento called Iron Bar, The Line of Ake, Fish, Rice, and all of that all refers to, you know, a Jamaican dish. So basically what I just said right now is that all of the things that are in that song refers to West Indies and Jamaica. And I don't think it's one of those songs that actually has like so much on it, but because of the soulful voice of Harry Belafonte, the powerful writing of Ivan Borges, they coming together. You know what? We always talk about this thing, and I'm happy that I'm saying this because now this gives me an opportunity to be able to remember a couple of amazing artists from the time. Gamble and Huff, songwriting guys from the 1970s, 1980s. They wrote a lot of beautiful songs. One of them being Close the Door by Teddy Pendergrass, right? So there's always this thing with great writers and great musicians. Now, Close the Door on its own, it's an amazing song well put together. But it was because of the beauty of how Gamble and Huff wrote the song, and then the voice of Teddy Pendergrass matching that energy. I hope you're getting me, Goyega.
I feel you. I'm with you.
Yeah, that connection, you know, you cannot break it off. And then you think about somebody like maybe Gamble and Huff again with Backstabbers by the OJs. I'm sure you know the OJs, Backstabbers. You must have heard this song before. The classic from the OJs, What They Do. The smiling in your face, all this time, you know, the Backstabbers. All this stuff, beautiful song. So what I'm trying to drag out of all of this is that the moment you find your McFadden and Whitehead, your Gamble and Huff, your Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis, your Teddy Riley, your this guy's L.A. Reid and Babyface Edmonds, there's always one particular artist that when they work together, it just creates magic. And I think even though Harry Belafonte did not work a whole lot with Ivan Burgee, this particular song was made for them together. I feel like if any other person has sang the song, it would have not had the same effect that these guys had working together on this song. In fact, Ivan had to ask Belafonte to please lend his voice to the song he had written. And the simplicity of the words, the simplicity of the tune itself, nothing crazy. It wasn't like the other Calypso songs. And I'm sure you agree to that, Boyega. Nothing extra. It was just as simple as it is. Just sing the song, basically. And that, you know, resulted to probably one of the most beautiful sounds of all time. And that's why it's just, you know, awesome as it is, right? So you think about all of those sounds, and then you also then see that over the years people have actually picked up some. Big shout out to you for lining up some of those samples that actually did, you know, numbers of the song. But they all did numbers because of the greatness that in which Harry Belafonte made all of the songs. And now we have to talk about the fact that every single time Harry Belafonte was making music, a lot of people said that he would always make sure that his music connects to him on a more important level than a surface level. So he wouldn't just sing a song just because. He would make sure that he works day and night to get the perfect sound, the perfect vibe, the perfect energy. And this now, all of those songs in their own ways impacted every generation afterward. I've not really done the research, but I just believe strongly that every decade after that Calypso album was recorded, there would have been one or two several artists that picked off from that particular album. So like, you know, all those songs are like songs that transcend time, the idea of time and all of that. So the impact cannot actually be measured because, I mean, what do you want to say? Think about it. A song in 2007, having to pick up a song that was released, what, 40, 50 years before the time, or 60 years.
You may not even know exactly what you're doing. You just know that the sound found you. Because the sound...
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, one of the most exciting episodes I think we've had on Sample Access was when we did G-Eazy. I know that's probably one of our coded episodes where a lot of people do not listen to. That episode was quite solid because we had to go over 100 years. Went all the way back to the 19th century, the 1800s, to drag out a song that G-Eazy took. Just a tune.
Eric Satie.
So, like, you think about all of these sounds, and like you said, now probably when Satie was doing it, I'm sure Satie did not think so far into the future and say 125 years. I think when we calculated, it was 126 years or thereabout. So, like, I'm not sure he thought, oh, okay, maybe in 130 years, these guys would make a sound or make music and everything will be techno and these guys will remember me. He just made a perfect tune for him. It's more like for Elise by Beethoven. Amazing stuff. I heard it in the 90s, heard it in the early 2000s. Guess what? People are still, you know, biting off that sound to date. So it's just quality. I think it's quality of music. That's why Ari Belafonte is one of the best. Quality music, quality in everything he did. Quality, basically.
Amazing stuff. What would be, I mean, we already mentioned everything about him. What would he be remembered for the most? How should the next generation acknowledge him? How do we ensure that his legacy is intact and is remembered?
I think nowadays we always find way to like immortalize people. We always look for, first and foremost, the fact that he has songs that we would listen to next year, next 2 years, next 10 years, next 15 years. Yeah. That's already enough to be able to say he would never stop being that guy or stop referencing him for his amazing work done. But also think about the fact that maybe because of stuff like forms of media, documentaries that gives a proper recollection or a proper documentation of how his life went from that guy that had issues in school to becoming the best and one of the best of his decade, and then going through the years and getting better and better, and then after his death, he's still going to be remembered for so many years. I think a book would be great. I'm sure a movie as well would make perfect sense. And also, this is what I've been saying for years, they should not stop sampling his music. His estate should allow people to sample his music. Do you get?
Yeah.
Sample any small thing, any big thing. Let his music be sampled.
Yeah.
Let people bite off it. You can as well check it up. Let people bite off it. And I also think one strong form of media, for example, apart from the fact that I'm a big fan of Frank Sinatra, right?
Hmm.
One of the things that made me go back to listen to Frank Sinatra's songs was the form of media that we know as film. Every song, every film that depicts the 80s, I'm sure I said this way earlier, but every song that depicts the old time, you will hear a Frank Sinatra song. Harry Belafonte's sounds have to be heard in every form of media that we have. And I think this is probably where we call out people like the radio stations and all of that too. In your classic days, in your days for classical music, don't just play songs from 10 years ago or 15 years ago. Take it all the way back in time. Let people reconsume or let people consume newly some of these old songs. I mean, imagine playing songs from Desmond Dekker, Sam Cooke, Otis Redding, you know, Nat King Cole, Ben E. King, Tammy Terrell, you know, all those guys, the amazing guys from the time, and the wonderful sounds they made. It immortalizes them. It makes them to be remembered. People would always think about them because of all of that, all the things that they did. So I think that's probably one of the ways people can go about that. But I feel like film will be a major part of media that would make sure that his story remains, you know, in the forefront.
So film, samples, sample access, documentaries, and a lot more to keep his memory alive. Let me go through some of the awards that he received, some of the major awards in his lifetime. And this is on biography.com. Belafonte achieved some of the highest honors possible over more than a half century in the public eye. He was a recipient of Kennedy Center honors in 1989, the National Medal of Arts in 1994, and a Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award in the year 2000. Additionally, in 2014, he received the Jean Herschelt Humanitarian Award at the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences Governors Award. Let me go on and say that Grammy Award for Best Folk Performance in 1960, Grammy Award for Best Folk Recording 65, Tony Award for Best Actor in a Musical in 1954, Emmy for Outstanding Performance in a Variety of Musical Program or Series in 1960. Yes, that's about it. He was nominated for 7 Emmys, 10 Grammys, and 1 Tony, winning 4 of these awards. Harry Belafonte was survived by children, and the spouse passed away in the same year, sadly. They got married in 2008, and Pamela Frank passed away the same year he passed away, 2023. I don't know who left first. Children, Shari, David, Adrian, Gina Belafonte. That's a good place to rest the conversation. It's been amazing. I mean, it's necessary, and it's valuable work. It's honorable work for us to pay respect to music's biggest legends and most impactful people. So yeah, we'll continue to do that on the sample axis. I think last time around was Papa Wemba, right?
Yeah, Papa Wemba, special man.
Yeah, Nelson, it's good to do this with you one more time. Episode 80.
We out.
See you next time.
Down the way where the nights are gay and the sun shines daily on the mountain top, I took a trip on a sailing ship, and when I reached Jamaica, I made a stop. But I'm sad to say I'm on my way, won't be back for many a day. My heart is down, my head is turning around. I had to leave a little girl in Kingston Town. Sounds of laughter everywhere and the dancing girls swaying to and fro. I must declare my heart is there, though I've been from Maine to Mexico. But I'm sad to say I'm on my way, won't be back for many a day. My heart is down, my head is turning around. I had to leave a little girl in Kingston Town.
The Sample Axis, administered by Boyega Nelson.
Yeah, let me try that.
You're listening to the Sample Axis podcast.